All right, everyone, welcome back to the Grant Rant. This is a monthly-ish podcast from Hanover Research. I say ish because I think the last one before our most recent one was back in like October-ish. But, you know, everyone deserves a holiday break, so that's okay. But we are back. It is March of 2024, so, you know, we're in some sort of warp speed, and that's okay, too. I'm back today with two guests. First of all, I want to welcome back Katie, who has been on a little bit of a hiatus from the podcast. So welcome back, Katie. Yay!
Yay! I'm so happy to be back. I missed you so much.
Yes, we missed you too. I was just telling Tom, who was on the last episode, that I guess you deserve a break every so often, but next time you have to clear it with me before you take any more time off, all right?
I'll be sure to submit my PTO request directly to you.
Of course. And then we also have Grants consultant Steve Jacks is back. He's been on a couple of our episodes previously, and we are thrilled to have him back today.
All right. Thanks so much for having me back. Always a pleasure chatting with y'all.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, we're here today to talk about the NIH CO6 program. It's an interesting little program that we get a lot of questions on. I want to just kind of kick things off today by maybe getting from Steve just a brief summary of the program. This program, I don't think, has been around. So when I started doing this job many, many moons ago, we're not going to say exactly how long ago, but when I started working at Hanover and familiarizing myself more in depth with the NIH and the programs, capital and renovation was not really a part of the traditional programs that I became familiar with. You know, most of the time when we talk about NIH, we're talking about R01s and K-series and training grants and things like that. This is relatively new to the scene. This is kind of the new, you know, hot, sexy new program. It's only been around for a couple of years that I'm aware of. So Steve, maybe you can kind of give us a quick and dirty summary of the CO6 and, you know, how recent it is.
Yeah, so I know I've done one at least a few years ago, the first one I did, but I think it's just been used kind of inconsistently, and unfortunately this year came out in a sort of unexpected timeline, so I know a lot of people were scrambling. But yeah, so the title of it is Biomedical Research Facilities, so very descriptive, and it's a pretty sizable grant. It's anywhere from $3 to $8 million to provide some research facilities to help an institution, complete research. So things like, used a lot of very frequently for vivarium, where you've got a lot of people within the institution using the same resources, and it's sort of hard to find money elsewhere to be able to fund these. So the CO6 is sort of a great opportunity, and you know, given the scale of it, a lot of institutions are going after it. They also have a sort of a nice feature in that there are specific kind of carve-outs that are focused on what are called institutions of emerging excellence. So those are not your large R01s, but they're institutions that there's kind of a very sort of a complex eligibility requirement that's described in the NOFO, but it largely focuses around geographic need, where there's areas where there are the geographic area is deficient in either healthcare technology, healthcare services, or research resources that they try to focus on those smaller institutions with a high need, even if they aren't the sort of big R1 institutions that are going to be funded by get the rest of the funding. And I was gone. And then in addition, so the proposal itself is it's a 12 pager like an R01, and it's sort of split into kind of two distinct sections. So the first is scientific justification, and the second is facility development. So the first part of the grant is really all about what is your institution doing in biomedical research in a certain area, and what is the need for this particular infrastructure that you're proposing to. So essentially, why you're doing such great work that you need either a modified or a new facility to keep and expand on doing that work. And then the second half is really the logistics. So it's, about how is it going to be constructed? What's the timeline? Who's in charge? What are the standards that you're using? all of the nitty-gritty that is going to need to be understood in order to see the full project. And there are also a lot of attachments with this submission. So there are, you know, schematics, there's lists of grants, there's, you know, any number of other things that provide some details as well. But, you know, the main document, which is just called Scientific Justification and Facility Development, that 12-pager is, you know, goes into, you know, needs to go into quite a bit of detail about sort of what will be built and how and so on.
And I know you said significant attachments. My understanding is that you need to be really, really detailed in those attachments, not just kind of a general plan, like architect's drawings, you know, blueprints, very detailed schematics, right, Steve?
Absolutely, yeah. So the satellite photo or map of the site, you've got line drawings. So those are, you know, about all the different floor plans, you know, laying out the dimensions, functions, you know, square footage of each room, you know, so that's, you know, bringing in people who, you know, the facilities construction people, and then a table of all the different components, so like individual rooms, etc. An additional table of, you know, any kind of fixed equipment that's going to go in there. The list of grants, as well as a kind of a very detailed timeline of how you're going to do the construction. And then, of course, a lot of around the budget justification and vendor quotes. So, if, you know, if you're buying a lot of equipment, that's going to go in there. That needs to be all documented as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of information that you need to pull together. In addition to, you know, a pretty detailed institutional support letter from, you know, a dean or a provost or president that shows the support for this particular project.
Okay, so when we're talking about preparing for this grant, this is not something, and, you know, when we're talking about NIH grants in general, you need to, like, prepare well ahead of time. But this grant only comes out about once a year. So, and this particular deadline, I know you mentioned it was a little bit earlier this year. I think we generally see them in the spring-ish period, but I think it was due in, like, late January of this year. So folks, and again, there's no guarantee that it'll be out again next year. I think it's been a wee bit inconsistent, but it's you know, been about every year. So would you recommend that if folks, I mean, especially since there's so many, like, you know, architectural things that need to go into this, and you need to have, like, you know, schematics, and I'm trying to pull up all my construction lingo, schematics and blueprints and, you know, other big construction words, as part of this application, you know, people probably need to, you know, anyone who's interested in this probably needs to be starting now. I mean, is that your general recommendation, Steve?
Yeah, so this is something you really want to start in advance. And, you know, it also requires a lot of aggregation of data across a lot of different investigators for what are their current needs, what are their, you know, expected needs, you know, a lot of information that you're going to pull together. So, yeah, in addition to all this stuff, all the construction components and you know, institutional support. So, you know, you have to identify, you know, if you're doing a renovation, you know, how that's going to be prioritized. And the other thing for starting early is that there are only each institution can only submit one of these per year. So, you know, there also has to be, from the research administration side, some kind of, you know, internal process for deciding, you know, what project is going to be the one from the institution that goes forward. So, yeah, this is something that, you know, if you're interested in, you should, you know, there should be a lot of discussion. You know, I would say 6 months at least before an anticipated deadline. So you know, last year it was in April. This year it was kind of late February for the due dates. But I would be, you know, by, you know, midsummer, starting to talk about the, you know, your interest in potentially applying for this and start pulling together all that information. And that's even if, you know, there's already discussion of a need for that infrastructure kind of in place. And, you know, if you're talking about a new, you know, especially a new space, new construction, you know, that's going to be probably, you know, years in the making, since that's kind of the timeline that most universities make these kind of plans on.
I was just going to come on here and make a joke about Midsommar and that movie. But Katie, if you have something more constructive, then you can go ahead.
I want to get into the shared use aspect of it a little bit. When we're talking about shared use, how broadly is NIH intending that shared use to be? Are we talking about broadly within the institution? Or are we talking about cross-institution collaboration? What's the sort of scale NIH is hoping to support with that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it really links to one of the things that I see as one of the biggest limitations or where people go wrong is that they focus too much on the impact that this construction or this renovation is going to have on within their own institution. But, the NOFO is very explicit about how it should have both local, regional, and national impacts. That's something that you really want to be aware of and being able to really make a clear case for. So I remember seeing, one of the ones that was recently funded was and I can't remember where the facility is now, but it's the sort of the primary, supplier of pigs for biomedical research. And, that's the sort of that they claimed, at least in the proposal, that they were the only one doing this. And they've had a huge surge in demand, and they're going to. The impact of this facility is going to affect, national level research. And, not every building is going to be like that, but to the extent possible, you really want to make a clear case for that regional and especially national impact of the research. Because, NIH is not looking for this to benefit, two or three investigators. And I have also seen proposals that are that small in scale and were not deemed very, very competitive. So, you really want this to impact, minimally a large number of investigators at your own institution, but also, those people should have collaborations nationally that this construction is going to enable.
Okay, I'm going to blow right on past the Babe reference and go right into asking you, Steve, you've obviously worked on a couple of these, at least, probably more than that. What, just kind of reflecting on the best proposals that you've seen and the worst proposals you've seen, obviously without, calling out names, although we can do that after we turn the mics off. What are some of the best things that you've seen or, what really stick out as, okay, yeah, this is a strong proposal. I think you've already alluded to some of that. And then what are some of the things that you see as missed opportunities or some of the biggest mistakes that you see in these CO6s?
Yeah, so like I said, probably the biggest one is that national and regional level impact, above and beyond how it's going to affect the institution, and I think the almost as close is really making a clear case for it's not just nice that you will have these, for example, renovated facilities or this new building to do research. Is that it's really essential to continue to do the great work that you've been doing. Going back to the pig example that I mentioned earlier, they made a clear case in their specific aims page that, we've had a 2,000% increase in requests for our services, but we've only been able to increase our capacity by 20%. And this is a big bottleneck that we can't fix any other way. And that bottleneck is affecting, research nationwide. And I think having a real clear case for, we have, and especially for those institutions of emerging excellence where they've really developed and they've grown a lot. And, you can say, we've expanded our number of investigators, and now we need, we need to house, six times the number of mice that we currently have, but we don't have the capacity, and we can't do any more research because that is the big bottleneck. And, to the extent possible, really coming up with, sort of a quantitative justification for these needs, in terms of this is the, percent increase in, capacity that we would need to really do all the work that we wanted to do. The next one is that I see often, and I think is a challenging one, is, for those institutions of emerging excellence where you're not basing it on like, oh, we are, the best at doing research in this particular area in the nation, is, you really want to make it clear how the work that is going to be enabled by the construction is going to have an impact on those populations that, you know, have been underserved in terms of healthcare technology services and other research resources. So, you know, that if you are one of those institutions, really making a clear case for what's the impact going to be on those sort of regional populations that are going to be, you know, that could be affected and are currently underserved. You know, next I see, you know, probably less so or less significantly, but I think sometimes there's not a lot of consideration for not only sort of what the current capacity needs are, but also the potential for growth. So you want to kind of build in more capacity, especially if you can make a clear case for, okay, we are an institution that is on this upward trajectory, and we want this facility not only to be good for us right now, but we want it to enable us to keep growing at the rate that we've been doing it for the next, 5 years, 10 years, whatever that timeline might be. So, you know, it's not just, you know, sort of solving a current need, it's solving a longer term possible need as well. And then finally, you know, minor thing, but I think, you know, the reviewers, you know, the review panels that I've seen clearly have construction professionals who are on the review panel, so not just scientists. So, you know, I've seen some really clear feedback around, you know, I don't think this is feasible. You know, the timeline that you've got is unrealistic. The budget you have is unrealistic, etc. So I think you really want to have someone on the team, who is a construction professional with a track record of building these types of buildings, you know, or renovating, doing the renovations, depending on what the type of project is. Because, there are reviewers who are going to be looking at, and that's kind of an unusual type of reviewer for NIH, but something that someone who they definitely do pull in. And, it's great when I see proposals to say, we've done, the co-investigator who's the construction professional has built five of these, and therefore we are really sure we can, make the timeline that we were proposing to.
That's fantastic. I'm actually really pleased that they have construction professionals on the review panels. That seems actually really critical for this. So, hadn't occurred to me that they were on the panel, but I'm glad to hear that they are. I was going to ask on a related question. So I noticed that the NOFO has a really strong emphasis on green and sustainable design practices. And I thought that was really intriguing. Like, they're very specific on, like, you know, optimizing energy and recycling wastewater and, you know, really specific details like that, that they want you to include in the design. Is that unique to the CO6, or is that something that you're starting to see with other instrumentation proposals from NIH?
Yeah, it's really nothing that I've seen elsewhere. But yeah, it's a nice component that it is given, you know, a notable consideration. So, you know, I have seen it come up in reviews where they have, you know, where maybe the proposer has put in some information about that, but the reviewers really ask for more. So I think it is it's a nice policy. And it is one that is taken seriously by reviewers.
And I think one of the things, too, just kind of going back to when we're talking about, you know, preparing for this. And, one of the things that Tom and I talked about last week when we were jamming on NSF ERI, which is the Engineering Research Initiation Program, that particular program was geared towards non-R1 institutions. So, institutions that are not classified as the very top tier institutions. I think this one's a little bit different because it could be for R1s, but it's also kind of setting aside that, you know, special designation, Steve, that you mentioned. But I also think that, you know, you need to be sure that you do have some investigators here that have, you know, you are showing that you do have the capacity to do the research. So it's a little bit different here. They don't want just, you know, the R1s going for this, but they also want to make sure that you have the capacity to do the research. So I think that that's important to keep in mind. So when you're trying to decide if you are a good fit, I want to make sure that we're, you know, letting our listeners know that it's not just anybody who wants to build, you know, a biomedical facility should be going for this. They have to have, you know, researchers who have a track record and should have a track record with NIH, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. So especially if you are not one of these institutions of emerging excellence, you know, I think you want to have a really clear track record. And in most cases, it's sort of some kind of subset of a larger, especially of an R1 level institution, investigators. So it might be centered around, a particular content area or the use of a particular technology, that is going to be utilizing these new facilities. For the non-IEEs, you know, really relying a lot on that track record of funding and or the sort of the trajectory of funding where you've really expanded a lot and, you know, now we need this facility to do even more of what we've been doing in the past. And there's a little more flexibility for IEEs. But again, even with that, you're going to need some amount of NIH funding. You're going to need a track record of developing and doing great research. And then there it's even probably more important, that trajectory, making a case for you're really improving and you want to keep improving and you need the facilities to do so.
Yeah. And what about the incorporation? So how important is it? You know, we talked about expanding the research and, you know, needing to expand your facilities or grow your facilities because you need more capacity. To what extent do you need to, I know that we find this in, NIH grants that we'll often, talk about this, but what about, building in the need to teach graduate students or have undergraduate, students participate in that type of research? Is that something that needs to be built into it? Or is that just kind of like a nice to have?
That is a nice to have, but it's, this grant, does have some explicit things about how, it's not appropriate, for example, to be used only didactically. So here, more than I think some other kind of institutional grants, here is where you really want to focus mostly on the research. You've got the graduate and undergraduate training, is sort of could be a cherry on the top, but you really want to be devoting most of your, very limited space to talking about just the quality of the research, by itself.
I'd be curious to know, I know that it's aiming to support biomedical research generally, but I'd be curious to know if you're seeing any trends in certain areas that NIH is prioritizing within biomedical research. Obviously, that's a pretty big category. Are we seeing any special emphasis, or is it really just broad across the board?
It's pretty broad. And it's, some of them are very broadly applicable facilities. So like a vivarium, that is frequently funded, but oftentimes other times, especially at larger institutions, it's, a little bit narrower in terms of both the content and the, who's going to be using it, depending on the specialization. Because again, $3 to $8 million is a lot of money for an NIH grant, but in the scale of when you're talking about, building new facilities and construction, it doesn't go as far as you would hope. So, I think sometimes there is, this is not, building a whole new science building. This is, building, a floor or a sub part of the floor, to do a particular thing. So there's really a lot of variability in the scale. And I think it's largely just related to, the size of the institution and the particular areas of strength that those institutions have.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think we get caught up in like $3 to $8 million. That's a ton of money. But then, when you really think about construction costs, it's really not a lot. And then when you also couple that with the fact, Steve, that you were mentioning, you need to really show that it's going to be, spread across as many research initiatives as possible. That's really not a lot. So, you're really talking about stretching the dollar here. Well, Steve, I think I'm out of questions. Katie, do you have any other things that you want to jam about when it comes to the CO6?
I think you've pretty well covered all the kind of noteworthy questions that I had and really excellent summary of the purpose of the program. So I would just say, Steve, is there anything that you would wish to put out to the potential CO6 applicants of the world? Anything that they should really know before they get started on writing?
Yeah, I mean, I think we covered a lot of it. And, you know, as, you know, was brought up earlier, you know, this is when you got to start early. So if you're interested next year, probably start planning, start some discussions, start pulling, you know, data together. And you know, the over the last few years, the specifics of the NOFO haven't changed dramatically. So it's one of those where you can kind of read the NOFO and, you know, get yourself and know that the content that you're going to need to provide, you know, will be probably pretty similar. So, you know, it's worth just getting a nice early start.
Awesome. Well, Katie, Steve, thank you so much for joining me today so we could talk about the CO6. I want to highlight a couple things before we go. Just yesterday, Steve was kind enough to host a webinar on writing your data management plan. So that should be up on our website probably by next week. It is available to everyone. So you can go to www.hanoverresearch.com/webinars and you'll be able to take a look at that. You can download the recording as well as the slides. So I deeply encourage you to look at that because we get so many questions about writing a data management plan, especially with the NIH's new guidelines. And you should not ask me because I don't know. You should ask Steve and you should go listen to the webinar first before you ask Steve. So go check that out. Coming up at the end of March, we are going to be having our next webinar is going to be on navigating the grant review process. So that is going to be on March 28th. So you can actually, at that same website, you can register to attend that. Even if you're not going to be able to attend that live, go ahead and register because after the event takes place, we will send you the goods. So check that out. Our next podcast is going to be on ARPA-H. So we're going to be doing a deep dive and kind of updating you on all the new programs coming out of ARPA-H. They've had a couple BAAs already. So we'll be looking more closely at ARPA-H. So check that out. Go ahead and look and listen to all of our previous podcasts as well. We did a whole NIH series last year, but we've done a lot of other cool things as well. And then if you have any questions about anything, you can email me at podcast@hanoverresearch.com. Or if you're a Hanover member, you can reach out to your contact and check out anything that's on our portal. We hope you join us again. Thanks for listening. And thank you again, Katie and Steve.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Mallory.